Brian hefted a discus of sweet potato pie. The crisp, buttery crust fractured in his hands as he raised it to his mouth. In three quick bites, he ate half of it. The rest he chucked over his shoulder. Drawing his panga from its leg sheath, he speared a backstrap and settled down to serious work. It was gamey, but good. It was all good, and the courses kept coming. Ryan ate like an animal, trying to satisfy a bottomless appetite. Though the food tasted delicious, it had no substance after he swallowed it. He had been eating for what seemed like hours, so long that his jaws ached from the chewing, and still his stomach felt hollow. He sat in a throne chair on a dais, slightly elevated above the other diners. Beside him, on a less ornate chair, was his lover and battlemate, Christy Roth. The color of her low-cut emerald velvet gown matched the color of her eyes and set off the blaze of her long, sentient red hair, which had retracted into a mass of eager coils around her face. Perspiration glazed the silky cleft between her breasts, and her cheeks were brightly flushed, consequences of the hall's sweltering heat. A wave of dizziness swept over Ryan, and he nearly passed out onto his plate. He was so hungry he kept forgetting to breathe between bites. He forced himself to slow down and look up from the food. The others seated at his table had come a long way to join the party, from the far side of the grave, to be exact. Prince Victor Bolt, Baron Nelson Mandeville, Masha Shige, Yashimoto, Captain Piriquad, Baron Sean Sharp, Sissy Torrance, Baron Termont, and Ryan's misshapen brother Harvey had thrown off their shrouds and were again housed in living flesh. Despite the fact that Ryan had sealed their respective dooms, his old enemies seemed to bear him no grudge. They were in excellent spirits, gorging on the mounded banquet platters and drinking from steaming mugs of high-proof buttered grog. At the surrounding tables, through the shifting clouds of smoke, he glimpsed less familiar but recognizable faces, the cannon fodder of 100 battles, Sekhmen and Mercies who had fallen to his blaster or blade. It was among these triple stoops that the brawl had broken out. Ryan was still pondering the puzzle of the party's guest list when Harvey Carter got up from his chair. Death, it appeared, had shown him no more mercy than life. Harvey still had the cruelly twisted body he'd been born with. He hoisted his mug high in salute.
Here's to Ryan Carter, the glorious hero of Deathlands. Considering what he did to each of us, I think one thing's safe to say. We should have kept an eye out for him.
Fuck that tired-ass joke.
Bolt and Quad pelted the deformed man with compressed wads of bread and bits of gristle.
Wait! And how about that panga? Sure, long is good when it comes to blades. But isn't 18 inches overcompensating for something?
Harvey Carter wagged his pinky finger at Ryan. A much better comedic effort. Encouraged, Harvey climbed to a precarious perch on the seat of his chair. He plunged a hand into his fly and unlimbered himself.
Here's to brotherhood!
He urinated in a broad arc across the banquet table, spraying and scattering the guests on the other side.
Hey, what the fuck?
Judging from little Harvey over there, your knife must be a yard long.
You got that right, sister.
Penis jokes and golden showers, normally grounds for bloodshed in Ryan's world, raised no hackles this night. Everybody was having too good a time to take offense. The no longer dead hooted and backslapped one another as they reclaimed their places at the table. Servants brought fresh platters of roasted meats and long trays of cakes and pies. As everyone got busy, fiddle, squeeze box, and drum started up right behind the guest of honor's throne. Christy pointed at a corner of Ryan's mouth.
You're dripping.
He wiped his mouth with the back of his hand, then looked down at a smear of red across his knuckles. Something tickled in the back of his throat. A gob of bloody matter shot out of Ryan's nose and landed on the tablecloth. As he stared at it, the gob fell apart, its minute components wriggling off in all directions. Ryan tasted copper. His head started to spin. Then his stomach convulsed. Hunching over, he vomited a shapeless, fluid mass onto his plate.
Fire blast.
Gray under their sheen of blood, like fibers of steel wool, the squirming wire worms gave off a rotten egg stench. Ryan shoved violently back from the table, and looking up, viewed the feast in a new light. Literally. The row of torches had ignited the threadbare tapestries, and the walls seethed with flame, brightly illuminating the hall and its occupants. Seated at his table, and all the other tables, were cobwebbed, moldering corpses. He turned to Christy. A small, hairy-legged spider had built a home between her shriveled breasts. Her hair hung lank and lifeless to her shoulders. Her eyes were closed and deeply sunken in their sockets, but the skin of her eyelids, face, and neck twitched and rippled, animated by the still-busy parasites beneath. Ryan Carter came awake with a hard jerk. He lay curled on an armaglass floor, his throat scorched, a burning pain spearing deep in his lungs, and withering heat beating against his back. Gray smoke, thick with particulate matter, swirled in the small chamber, transected by wild flashes of electricity. The jump dream had ended, but his nightmare continued. The Matrans unit was on fire.
Oh, fuck.
Beside him on the floor, he could see the slumping forms of his five companions. As he pushed up from the blistering hot armaglass, his world went dim around the edges. Lack of oxygen was shutting down his brain. If he allowed himself to pass out, they would all die, and horribly. A tingling rush of adrenaline brought Ryan to full consciousness. He had to use his shoulders to crack loose the door of the Matrans unit, which was stuck in the jam. It finally swung open, revealing an anteroom lit by a bank of flickering fluorescent bulbs. Fresh air rushed in around him, feeding the flames.
Thank God.
Ryan turned back to the blaze and his helpless friends. He grabbed hold of the nearest arm and dragged its owner's body over to the portal. The tails of Doc Tanner's frock coat were smoking as Ryan tumbled him out of the chamber. The lanky old man didn't move. There was no time to check for a pulse. The fire was starting to shoot up along the expansion seams in the armaglass floor. Ryan gathered Christy in his arms. Though she was unconscious, her prehensile muddy hair had retracted into the tight ringlets of mortal fear. He unceremoniously pitched her out of the doorway.
Oh.
When Ryan tried to do the same for Jack Lauren, the albino came too in his grasp. Faster than a blink, the wild child of the Deathlands had the razor-sharp point of a leaf-bladed knife jammed against the front of Ryan's throat, his slitted, blood-red eyes glittering. Ryan gave him a hard shake.
Jack! Jack, it's me! For Nuke's sake, wake up!
The youth's eyes widened, and he immediately lowered the blade.
Come on! We've got to hurry!
After dragging their two remaining companions over the threshold, he and Jack did the same with all their backpacks. Crossing the chamber was like being caught on an armaglass skillet. Impervious to heat, the unit's floor plates weren't burning. It was the material beneath, circuitry, floor joists, insulation, that was on fire. Boot soles melting, Ryan retrieved his pre-dark treasure, a scoped Steyr SSG-70 sniper rifle. Jack staggered out of the Matrans ahead of him, his lank white hair and ghostly skin peppered with soot. Ryan was relieved to see the rest of his crew, certainly worse for wear, but alive and awake. Christy sat on the floor, her long legs drawn up to her chest. She looked dazed, but she wasn't burned. In the eerie, flickering light, trapped smoke rose like steam from the shoulders and back of her fur coat. Dr. Mildred Wyeth knelt beside her. She was dressed in an OD jacket, camouflage BDU pants, jungle boots, and a sleeveless gray t-shirt. She wore her hair in braided, beaded plaits. On her hip was a Czech ZKR-551 revolver in a pancake holster, the same weapon she had used to win a silver medal in pistol shooting in the last ever Olympic Games. Shortly after that victory, she had been the victim of complications during surgery, a result of reaction to anesthetic. To save her life, the medical team put her in cryogenic stasis. Less than a month later, when a massive thermonuclear exchange between the United States and the Soviet Union ended civilization, Mildred slept dreamlessly through it. She continued to sleep for another 100 years, until Ryan and the others revived her. What had gone so terribly wrong on January 20th, 2001, was anybody's guess. Human error, machine error, a combination of same. And the sad truth was, it no longer mattered. All the people who gave a damn about laying blame had been vaporized. The great mistake, once made, was uncorrectable. By its very nature, it could never be repeated. It had destroyed Earth and its potential. It had derailed human history. While Mildred attended to Christy, Doc released the catch on his ebony sword stick and unsheathed the rapier blade. Satisfied that it wasn't damaged, he resheathed it and checked his sidearm. From a tooled Mexican leather holster, he drew a massive gold-engraved revolver. The two-barreled Lama was a Civil War black powder relic and the original Room Broom. Beneath a 6.5-inch pistol barrel hung a second scattergun barrel, chambered for a single load of blue whistlers. Though Dr. Theophilus Algernon Tanner appeared to be a well-preserved 60, as with Mildred Wyeth, appearances were deceiving. Chronologically, his age was closer to 4 times 60. The Harvard and Oxford-educated Tanner had the distinction of being the first human time traveler, albeit an unwilling one. He had been ripped from the loving bosom of his family in 1896 and drawn 100 years into the future by the whitecoats of Operation Kronos. Doc had spent his brief time in the late 1990s as a prisoner, locked down inside the ultra-secret facility. The jubilation of the 20th century scientists over their success was short-lived, thanks to Tanner's ingratitude, truculence, and general unpleasantness. Shortly before Skydark, to rid themselves of the troublemaker and to further test the limits of their experimental technology, they had hurled him forward in time. In so doing, they had inadvertently saved him from the nuke cost. John Barrymore Dix, his fedora pushed way back on his head, was preoccupied, patting down his coat pockets. Ryan and JB had been running buddies since their convoy days with Trader, Deathland's legendary freebooter. It was Trader who had given JB, a weapons specialist of extraordinary talent, the nickname Armorer. Finding nothing in his coat, with more urgency, JB turned to his trousers. When he looked up from the fruitless search, Ryan read the expression behind the smudged, wire-rimmed glasses. Triple red. Dropping his Smith & Wesson M4000 12-gauge shotgun, JB jumped for the Mat-Trans unit.
Fire in the hole! Get down!
JB grabbed the edge of the door. A string of explosions from inside the chamber rocked the room. In the same instant, a volley of buckshot ricocheted out the portal at a steep upward angle, cutting ragged furrows in the acoustic tile ceiling and shattering fluorescent bulbs. JB slammed the door shut, sealing the last of the 12-gauge cook-offs behind armaglass and steel.
Fuck.
The armorer had cause to be upset with himself. In Deathlands, reliable ammo was more valuable than gold. Even with the door closed, the adjoining walls and ceiling were starting to blister from the heat. Though there were smoke sensors and fire suppression nozzles placed at intervals along the ceiling, the century-old system was inoperative. Still a bit dazed, Christy got up from the floor.
Oh, what the blazes happened? Oh.
Ryan pointed out the deep scoring of tool marks along the doorframe. Next to it, a head-size hole in the plaster revealed a mass of melted conduit and charred wiring. The conclusion was as unmistakable as it was disheartening.
Somebody's beating us here.
Yeah. Right, Mildred. When they saw the heavy door, they must have figured to find sweet pickings on the other side. They couldn't open it with their pry bars and sledges, so they attacked the wall, looking for another way in. That was a dead end, too.
After the damage was done, the unit just sat there until we showed up. The rematerialization power surge short-circuited the system. We were lucky to come through in one piece.
Doc dusted off the lapels of his frock coat.
One thing is certain. The machine has jumped its final cargo. Once again, we find ourselves reduced to more primitive means of transportation. Namely, our own feet.
The smoke is getting worse in here. No telling what kind of toxic fumes we're inhaling. There could even be a radiation leak if the containment vessel's been breached. I suggest we take this show on the road before we start glowing in the dark.
Mildred didn't have to add that whoever had wrecked the unit could still be lying in wait. After drawing their weapons and shouldering their packs, the six companions exited the anteroom and control room, then entered the long doorless corridor that separated the Mat-Trans unit from the rest of the redoubt.